Welcome to Brain Core, the podcast that introduces you to new psychology and neuroscience research. I'm Tolu Faramika, and I'm joined by my co-host, Christina Valkanis. We hope you've all been enjoying your summer. I just got back from Nigeria, and I know Christina's been doing some traveling herself. Chris, how's your summer been going, and where have you been recently?
My summer was fully loaded. I went to back to Canada to visit my family there, and then my mom got a little jealous that I'm abroad studying. So on the way back to school, she wanted to do a little trip of Europe. So we went to France, and then we went to Italy, and then Greece because we have our family there. And now I'm back in Cyprus for school.
Nice. Wow. Okay. So I'm also jealous now. I saw your pictures and I was like, oh, like I want to be there too. So we're in a new era of Brain Core. Christina and I have been talking about how to keep our uploads consistent and expand a little bit. So we've decided to cut down to about 4 uploads a year just to focus on quality over quantity. So we're actually excited to do this because it gives us more time to do more research and find really interesting professionals like our guest who has joined us today. So we are joined by Sabina Pillet. She's a senior lead psychotherapist at Toronto's Field Trip Health. Sabina, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tolu. Hi, Christina. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. So our listeners know quite a lot about Christina and I. Can you tell us a bit about your journey and maybe what you do currently?
Yeah, sure. So as you mentioned, you know, I'm the senior lead psychotherapist at Field Trip Health. We have 11 clinics across US and Canada and one in Amsterdam, actually, as well. We offer psychedelic assisted psychotherapy. And right now what that means is ketamine assisted psychotherapy at most of our clinics. So I am supporting the clinical services and developing clinical services for our organization. I'm also a psychotherapist, so I facilitate our sessions with our clients. I help to develop new programs. I support our teams. What else do you want to know?
Well, how did you get into that? Like, what was your maybe educational journey?
Yeah. Okay. My master's is in clinical and counseling psychology, which I did at University of Toronto. But before that, actually, I would say that my journey started, way before that. In my undergrad, I was in a life sciences program and, going to pursue medicine. And, I did a minor in Buddhism, psychology, and mental health. And that was the first year of that program at U of T. And that just kind of opened my eyes in terms of what was new, what was exciting, what was possible in the field of healthcare and science. So for me, why it was so exciting was that I really felt like it was bridging science and spirituality. And I saw that that was possible. You know, I saw that it was possible to do new innovative things that hadn't been done before. So, you know, learning Buddhism and psychology, or the intersection between Buddhism and psychology, really kind of ushered me down the path that I'm on now. I had some early classes that were really inspiring in so many ways, not just that one. And I had some life experiences around that time too, that really clarified, the path that I was on, what I was interested in, what kind of work that I wanted to do, and how best to use my own skills and talents. So I continued down that path, and I ended up doing my master's in clinical and counseling psychology, and did my master's thesis research on spiritual emergencies that happened through mindfulness, meditative experiences. So a lot of people were pursuing mindfulness meditation for healing. It's been introduced in every sort of setting, work settings, university, like, you know, in your residence, I'm sure, you know, online, everywhere, right? And yet no one was talking about kind of the challenging experiences that people can have through these practices. So explored that to try and understand them better, including, you know, how can people prepare for and integrate these experiences? And what I learned through that research was that, you know, people are having these kind of non-ordinary experiences that they perceive as negative because they don't really have the supportive framework to understand and integrate them. However, mm-hmm. when we have that support, when we integrate these powerful, shifting, transformative experiences, it can really transform our lives in a positive way. It can lead us, you know, back home to ourselves. Right. So through that, I started doing integration work for meditation, facilitating mindfulness groups, you know, doing all sorts of therapy in different settings, you know, private clinics, hospitals, research settings, and I really just kind of found my niche. I love working with people. I love talking to people, and I love helping people, you know, discover themselves and live their best life.
Wow. That's so interesting. We love talking about intersections on the podcast. So I really like that you brought in that like Buddhism psychology intersection. Mm-hmm. So before we, you know, do a deep dive into the topic of the episode, I was looking through the Field Trip Health website mm-hmm. and I saw that the mission is to bring the world to life through psychedelics and psychedelic enhanced psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be the term of our episode, or TOTE. So mm-hmm. what are psychedelics, and could you maybe describe how people might feel under their influence?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So psychedelic, well, the word psychedelic, it comes from a Greek word. It's two Greek words, so psyche and delos, and that roughly translated means mind manifesting. Okay, so a lot of people think that psychedelics are hallucinogens. Okay, they're commonly conflated, or that they lead to having kind of visions or hallucinations, right? But that may or may not happen in a psychedelic experience. It's actually kind of a small part of the benefit that psychedelics can have in a person's life. Okay. So how I think of psychedelics is, you know, something that a substance or an experience that alters a person's consciousness, awareness, perception, emotions, cognitive processes. It alters our understanding of ourself. It illuminates our inner world and alters our understanding of our relationship between ourself and our outer world. And I think that different psychedelics have their own unique characteristics and properties and benefits and drawbacks and challenges too. So depending on, you know, where you are in your healing journey and what you're looking for and the resources and supports that you have available, different psychedelic experiences produce different experiences. Medicines produce different experiences because, you know, a key part of the psychedelic experience is something that we call set and setting. So set and setting really hints at the holistic nature of a psychedelic experience. So set and setting refers to the fact that our mindsets, okay, and the environment of the experience, the setting of the experience, okay, and all the factors that are involved in that deeply and significantly impact the kind of experience that you're going to have, you know, the qualities of that experience, the healing potential of that experience as well. So it's really kind of hard to say at a broad level, you know, what kind of changes or how a psychedelic experience feels. I can talk about the ketamine experience a little bit more in a more focused way. You know, so ketamine is technically not a psychedelic, you know, it's a dissociative anesthetic. It's been used in hospitals worldwide for the last 60 or so, 40 years or so, but it's been used in the Vietnam War. It was developed in the 50s. Okay. And through its use in hospitals, they found that it had antidepressant properties. They also found that it would produce, you know, feelings like a sense of calm, relaxation, deepened self-awareness, an ability to kind of witness your kind of emotional and inner experience without being overwhelmed or flooded. So that allows you to kind of process your traumas. It can also lead to a sense of awe and wonder, a sense of interconnection. It may or may not include sensory changes like an appreciation for music or having closed eye visuals, patterns, colors, memories pop up, visions sometimes. But, you know, I do want to say that, you know, the quote unquote psychedelic or hallucinogenic properties of psychedelics are not necessarily correlated with its benefits. Okay. So sometimes people can come in and they want the visions. They want what, you know, the media is talking about. They want the unicorns and rainbows, and that's great and all. And that has a place in all of this, but it's not the whole story. So it's part of why I'm here, because I do want to kind of talk about some of the myths about psychedelic experiences and some of the benefits and limitations as well, too. You know, it's they have exciting potential, and it's also not for everybody.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that ketamine was not a psychedelic. Do you guys use psychedelics as well at Fields Trip Health, or do you stick to the ketamine experience?
Good question. So ketamine can produce psychedelic-like experiences. It can be very similar to classic psychedelics, you know, a sense of compassion, connection, love, a softening of our defenses, you know. It can produce all of those kind of hallucinogenic experiences too. But I would say ketamine, it produces a range of experiences, and it can be really, really different every time. We do offer other psychedelic experiences through Canada's Special Access Program. So Health Canada has a special access program where individuals can apply directly to Health Canada for an exception to access these scheduled medicines, essentially. Clients themselves actually have to source those medicines themselves, but we can offer the safe container and the psychotherapy for those experiences. However, you know, it is a slow process right now. I think Health Canada is just kind of catching on to the healing potential of these medicines, especially in the last few years with the pandemic. And so, you know, there's an organization called Theracell who's doing some great work advocating for patients, end of life care for patients. So, you know, in that context, we will offer psychotherapy, supportive psychotherapy. However, you know, I think a lot is going to change actually in the next couple years. If we see that the FDA approves MDMA in the States, I suspect, you know, and I'm hopeful that Canada will follow suit.
Yeah, so lots that's of good. Changes.
Yeah.
It's good that they're starting, because I know through history, there's been a lot of backlash with psychedelics, and it was even hard to do research using them to even start figuring out dosing and stuff like that. From just a question bouncing off the idea of ketamine, you said it has a vast variety of effects. Do we know the kind of action that it has on our neurons, or the sort of mechanism of action of ketamine? Do we know anything about that?
Yeah, we know a lot about it in terms of not necessarily the mechanisms of action from a psychological standpoint, but from a neurobiological, we do, because of its use in hospitals as analgesic and anesthetic. And its benefit is that it can reduce pain without depressing a person's breathing and compromising your airways. And through its use in these different settings, they found that it acts on the NMDA receptor and modulates glutamate functioning. Okay. So this is, you know, really interesting, exciting, especially in light of recent research that has come out showing that the model that, you know, the serotonin model of depression, right? That low serotonin levels contribute to depression is a very, is inaccurate and is a limited way of an understanding depression, okay? Mm. And, you know, to some degree, I think depression is actually a systemic issue, you know, and there are a whole host of factors that go into experiencing depression, and it manifests differently in different cultures in different parts of the world, you know. So, you know, the new research on ketamine and the literature and the evidence is building is that, you know, glutamate functioning is actually quite relevant in our discussions on the origin and maintenance of depression.
That's awesome. I like that you mentioned that depression being more of a systemic issue, because it there with all of the boundaries that people have to battle when they do have depression to try and get treatment and stuff like that, it does come down to a sort of systemic issue. So you did mention that ketamine can be used for as an antidepressant with the psychotherapy. Do you guys use it for anything else?
Yeah, so we, you know, I want to make it clear that we offer ketamine-assisted psychotherapy. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's different than, and perhaps we'll talk about this in a bit, but it's different than IV ketamine or a kind of purely medicalized approach to treatment. Okay. We offer holistic treatment, Pure Field Trip, and which sees that ketamine is just one part of this treatment that we're offering. So in that context, we treat treatment-resistant depression, we treat treatment-resistant PTSD, treatment-resistant complex trauma, anxiety, OCD, eating disorders. So there's a lot of literature right now just kind of building in these areas that show that ketamine can be helpful and for certain people in certain contexts. I think it goes beyond the diagnoses, but we're working within diagnoses right now because of the regulations that exist in Ontario and Canada, right? So we are doing things within our scope right now and waiting for the literature to catch up as well. But I can tell you that a lot of different kinds of people benefit from this treatment because it's not just about the drug or the medicine. Okay. They are getting an experience here, and clients have told me this. They're getting an experience there here that they have never received in any other place in their lives, in any other experience in mental health or healthcare, you know. And that is leading to the profound shifts, I believe, you know. And the ketamine is really just facilitating that, and the psychotherapy is facilitating that. So, you know, there beyond the diagnosis, I think there are certain kinds of people that really are ready for a treatment like this and can benefit from what we offer.
That's awesome. From what it sounds like you guys have a really patient-centered approach, and that's really important in my opinion. I just want to talk a bit more about the psychotherapy, because you mentioned that you are a psychotherapist as well. Would you be able to describe what a typical session at Field Trip Health is like?
Sure. So I love how you mentioned that we're patient-centered, we're client-centered, we like to say. We individualize this treatment process as much as possible. You know, my job as a psychotherapist is really to get to know the unique human being that's sitting in front of me, you know, and that all of the kind of life experiences that brought them to you know, my chair and this experience. So that's my job, to create a kind of safe, supportive container where they can get in touch with themselves. So we operate from a place where, you know, there's this concept in psychedelic psychotherapy of the inner healing intelligence. So our bodies are naturally oriented towards healing and growth, okay? Or at the very least, survival. Right? When we get a cut, right, our bodies immediately mobilize. We don't have to think about it, right? Our bodies just do it. Our bodies mobilize to kind of heal that wound, maybe, you know, produce a scab so that we can do the healing work underneath, Okay. So this is something that our bodies naturally do. So in psychedelic psychotherapy, what our job as a psychotherapist is to create that safe, supportive container or foundation where a person's body can do what it's naturally oriented to do. Okay. And for that to happen, there needs to be safety. There needs to be trust. There needs to be a therapeutic relationship. So all the therapeutic work that we do is actually founded on that therapeutic relationship. So all our therapists in our clinic really prioritize building, building a really kind of solid and attuned, compassionate relationship with our clients. And from that place, okay, we can do great psychotherapy together. You know, it's a collaborative process. It's not a top-down process. I really try to equalize the playing field, okay? And I really, you know, respect and appreciate that clients are coming in with their own wisdom and life experiences. They know themselves better than I know them, okay? And I have my knowledge and my wisdom from my life experiences and my trainings, okay? And when we bring that together, we can do amazing work, okay? So, you know, our treatment on a broad scale, that's what it looks like. Okay. But how we actually do this in the clinic is, at least in Ontario, you know, clients have to get referred by their physician. They undergo a psychiatric consultation. At that stage, the psychiatrist determines whether they're a good fit for this treatment program, not just from a kind of, you know, not from a very kind of basic, you know, have they trialed two different medications? Have they done psychotherapy? But are they really kind of equipped and ready to do a treatment like this, which can be challenging at times, okay? Do they have the right mindset and resources and support to do a treatment like this, okay? So then we will have a psychological intake where they meet their therapist at field trip, okay? And, you know, get to know their life history, their challenges, their strengths, okay, what they're here to work on, their goals, their intentions, okay. Then we have a prep session to prepare them for their in-clinic experience and their medicine experience. They come into the clinic and, you know, we make sure that they feel really comfortable in our space. And a lot of clients say that right when they walk through our doors, they feel something. They feel something different. And then they will, you know, the medical team, we work on a multidisciplinary team. So I work with nurse practitioners, physicians, consult with a psychiatrist, other therapists. Okay. The medical team kind of takes over and, you know, facilitates discussions around the dosing protocols. Clients are monitored throughout their session, their heart rate, O2, blood pressure. So they are safe the entire time. They're monitored the entire time. You know, I read them a nice kind of meditation or a guided visualization before they go into their journey. We administer sublingual lozenges in Ontario, but most of our other clinics use IM, intramuscular injections. And then they have their experience. And ketamine is very much an inward experience. So typically people have their experiences for about 60 minutes, okay? Closed eye, eye shades, headphones, you know, really relaxing, facilitating music. We have a beautiful space to have these experiences. And then they come out and we do a little bit of psychotherapy. We debrief about the experience and what they noticed. And then the next day, 24 hours later, we'll have an integration session. That's where we start to kind of crystallize the themes that are kind of coming up in our medicine sessions and start to find ways that we can bring these insights into our daily life, because that's really where the change happens, you know? Mm-hmm. The medicine experience itself does not lead to long-lasting changes, I believe, at least. And the research is starting to show that.
It sounds like the whole process is very holistic, like even the referral process, where you're not just maybe looking at previous history, like what medications have they taken, like you're actually looking at even their mindset as well, which I think is like quite important for this kind of therapy. Mm-hmm. So I think you mentioned this earlier, but I was also doing a bit of research before this episode, and I saw so many articles investigating the use of ketamine for different issues. So I saw it being used for alcohol use disorder, chronic suicidality, bipolar depression, etc. So, and I know you were saying that maybe the research is really just starting to catch up, but when does it go from being like theoretically useful to being used in practice? So for example, now you're using it for treatment-resistant depression and PTSD, anxiety. So when do you start branching out to maybe use it for other types of disorders?
That's a tricky question. It's something that we approach on a case-by-case basis. We look at the available research and we look at the particular factors and context that the client is bringing in with them. And we make a judgment call as a team about whether this can be appropriate and whether the benefits outweigh the risks. Because there are risks, you know, there are limitations to this. It's not for everybody at every stage of their healing journey, okay? And this is something that I really try to educate people on when they come in through our doors, because, you know, I want them to benefit from this experience, you know? I don't take pleasure in just giving people a treatment that's not going to help them or not going to work for them, you know, but I'd rather they come to that conclusion on their own and really develop an understanding of who they are and what they need at this particular moment in their healing journey. And it may not be this. They may need psychotherapy. They may need to go to psychotherapy for some months, okay, and develop a good foundation and develop a good understanding of themselves in order to really, really benefit from this. So we really approach it on a case-by-case basis, but, you know, take our cues from the evidence and available literature as much as possible.
Right. That makes sense. So you mentioned this earlier, or I think actually I saw this maybe online. So there's a spiritual aspect to the treatment at Field Trip Health. Can you expand a little bit more on that?
Okay. So, you know, the psychedelic experience, as I said, can produce kind of a range of experiences. Okay. And on one end, and one aspect or dimension of that experience is a spiritual experience, okay? Not just the ketamine experience, but is, you know, any psychedelic, any experience in our lives can be a spiritual experience, okay? So the psychedelic experience, I think, can put us in touch with, you know, can elicit exploration of existential questions and issues like meaning and purpose and birth and death and how to live a good life and connection and love and freedom and all these kind of big ideas and big concepts that are usually tackled within the domain of religion and spirituality. So many clients, you know, because of the types of clients we can see here, many clients are coming in with a sense of disconnection from themselves, from others, from the world around them, you know, and depression particularly and trauma really does kind of reduce our self-concept to our egos, you know, and our egos are solely, focused on survival, okay, getting through the day. Okay. To live another day, to procreate really. Okay. And yet focusing on mere survival is preventing us from living full, rich and expansive lives. Okay. So clients say that they can come in and leave with a bird's eye view of themselves, you know, moving beyond this kind of individualistic view of themselves. And some people say that this might be one source of depression, you know, very kind of narrow, limited view of ourselves, a view of suffering and how suffering arises. Mm-hmm. And moving beyond that to an understanding of ourselves as interconnected, interdependent beings. And these are ideas that are actually also found in biology, in chemistry, in physics, okay, and in many of the world religions. So this is why I'm so excited about psychedelics, because it lives at the intersection of science and spirituality and art, okay? And when, you know, I studied you know, biology, chemistry, and physics in undergrad. And it also kind of gave me another perspective on these same topics and these same ideas, another lens through which to understand these concepts, which I think is really exciting. So, you know, clients can have this sense of wonder and awe and oneness, all of which can be transformative experiences, you know, because we're seeing ourselves in a new way. You know, we are on this, you know, planet Earth, hurtling around the sun, okay, in a vast universe, okay, and that in itself, the fact that we can have this conversation, okay, that our chemistry and our biology is attuning enough to understand each other and work together and build the systems that we've built in this world, that is amazing in and of itself. That is magical in itself. That is spiritual if we can look at it in a certain way too, right? So spirituality means different things for different people, okay? I've studied all the world religions and I see common core and commonality between many of them, okay? And how we interpret that is up to you, you know, in a way that makes sense for you. You know, so I never try to kind of impose my own perspectives of what that's supposed to look like, but I can see that having a sense of spirituality, a sense of interconnection, a sense of the big picture of who am I and what am I on this earth to do, mm-hmm. and how do I live a good life, you know, that yeah. really can kind of anchor people and guide people.
Yeah, like a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
And being.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like what you said, even about just us hurling through space in that huge universe, it kind of grounds you. It just, you realize in the grand scheme of things, something small that might bother you for a few minutes or even for a day, it's just not that important in the end.
Yeah. It you know, I take a both and perspective in that it is both very important and not important at all, you know, yeah. depending on the lens that we look at it, right?
Perspective.
So it gives people perspective, right? And to some degree, you know, being a human being on this earth means that we experience challenges in life, right? None of us get to escape from that, right? But if we can kind of contextualize those challenges and make sense of that and make sense of, have an understanding of how that those challenges fit into a larger story of who we are and why we're on this earth, then that can be just really grounding and motivating and inspiring for a lot of people.
For sure. I wanted to ask about also you mentioned earlier, I know that's going to shift the conversation a bit, but you mentioned the mechanism of administration for the ketamine. You have two options, the injection or the lozenge. Is there any benefits to ingesting ketamine or using the injection?
That's a fair question. And, you know, different routes of administration have different bioavailability, you know, when it comes to the ketamine that's being absorbed by your system. So we adjust our dosing protocols depending on the route of administration. With that being said, you know, I will say that dosing is really idiosyncratic. There's a bit of mystery behind it, to be perfectly honest. And it comes down to, you know, individual factors, set and setting, things like that. Those parts of the experience that we can't quantify, you know, and I've seen time and time again, you know, I've done over 1,000 sessions now, and I can see that a higher dose doesn't lead to deeper experiences. Higher dose doesn't lead to, more profound and persistent antidepressant effects. Okay. It doesn't lead to any sort of benefits. I will say that the IM is quicker, the onset, and from a kind of clinic flow perspective, there are benefits to that, you know, it makes it easier. The sublingual lozenge, you know, it doesn't taste great. but a lot of people get used to it. And ultimately, it's producing similar experiences. And IV you know, IV has its drawbacks in the sense that it has to be kind of administered in a very kind of clinical, medicalized setting, and you need to have a lot of equipment. It kind of has a bit of a cold feel, but, you know, some people benefit from it. But from everything I've been kind of reading and, you know, just consulting with other practitioners in the field, you know, from a big picture perspective, there are other factors that are so much more important than the route of administration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the way you answered that. There wasn't a black or a white. It just goes back to how client-centered you guys are.
So I think I did a drugs and the brain course back in uni. We were just looking at the history, and I think we had to do this paper. We had to pick a drug and do a paper on it, do a bunch of research on it. So other psychedelics, like maybe like LSD, mushrooms, were used in psychotherapeutics back in the day. But I think, did I say psychotherapeutics? Psychotherapies back in the day. But I think there was this maybe lack of consensus going on among researchers. And so these drugs are now considered maybe too dangerous to be legal. Why do you think people are becoming more open-minded toward psychedelic-based treatments these days?
So I'd like to challenge that, you know, the assumptions that are present in that question, because there were a whole host of political and social and economical reasons why these drugs were, banned, okay? Mm-hmm. So I, you know, that is a whole nother topic, okay, that I'm going to invite you and your listeners to kind of look into a little bit more. And I think, you know, a quick primer on those reasons are touched on in Michael Pollan's new Netflix series, How to Change Your Mind,
yeah,
in this book.
I started watching that.
And that's just a beginning, okay? And if you'd like to go deeper, you could reach out to me. I'm happy to give you recommendations, but that's a good place to start. I will say that there was, you know, in the 50s and 60s, there was a fervor, there was an excitement, there was, I think that in the context of the Vietnam War and people becoming, you know, anti-war, for example, and anti-authority, that is kind of very, threatening to, dominant social structures, right? And people in power. So that being said, that was happening. And, you know, I think it's not that there wasn't a consensus. I think there was a lack of consensus in terms of how we can best use these medicines in a safe and thoughtful way, right? To harness its benefits and limit its risks and limitations, you know, for which all medications and all experiences have downsides and challenges. So, you know, I think that the work of Rick Doblin, it has been important in that he has, for the last 30 plus years, he has been advocating for not MDMA, but MDMA-assisted psychotherapy. You know, the psychotherapy part is a really critical piece in this, okay? Mm-hmm. To be used to treat treatment-resistant conditions like PTSD, right? Which have high mortality, lots of people not really benefiting from existing treatments. So there was an opportunity here to do it in kind of a medicalized way. And through, you know, he did it really kind of thoughtfully in that, like, he focused on the research and used existing pathways to build the evidence that we need and the data that we need to say, hey, this works. You know, what we as psychotherapists always had the intuition that it worked, you know, and that it helped people. But for, you know, people out there who are just kind of discovering these medicines, people are reassured by data, you know, and reassured when kind of professional people are using these medicines. Okay. And I really think that in the last few years with the pandemic, I think things have really kind of accelerated in that we are suddenly aware that we're, how deeply interconnected we all are, you know, how much our, how, you know, fragile our mental health is, how much we need each other. And we need more options. We need more options because current mental health treatments, have limited efficacy, you know, aren't helping people in the way that they're intended to, in the way they need to. And I think it comes back to systemic issues, which I think we're all developing more an awareness of in the last 5-10 years, especially. So I think in that context, psychedelics makes a lot of sense. I think people are realizing that, you know, our kind of capitalist way of living our lives and operating, you know, in our time on this earth is actually leading to more suffering. It is leading to the degradation of our planet. Okay. And it is leading to a lot of disconnection and stress for a lot of people. So what better than a medicine that allow, that can be the antidote to that, that can, you know, facilitate connection, facilitate an understanding of ourselves as part of a larger ecosystem, as deeply intertwined with the earth and other people on it, you know? So I think that's why, you know, people are more open to this now, because, you know, psychotherapy is great. Medicine, traditional medicine has its place. Okay. So I'm not saying that it doesn't, but we need more options and we need to kind of expand the conversation and be open to new ideas.
Of course. Yeah. It's one of the things I've been learning too in med school now, to, instead of just going straight to a treatment, to explore other options with a patient rather than just saying, oh, here's the drug. Maybe that'll put a Band-Aid on it.
Yeah. A Band-Aid. And it's amazing. What I wonder what would happen if a physician talked to their patients in the way that we do, you know, to prepare someone to take a medicine, right? Like, and got to know them and really, you know, invested in their care in a way that the system is making it hard to do, right? For physicians as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go back to what you said too about the more options with your role. You've been doing just that. You've been giving people more options. So since we're a channel devoted mostly to students, what advice would you give to a student trying to be a trailblazer in science, just like you, and maybe bring more options to light?
Great question. And you know, that's partly why I'm here. I mean, I'm a U of T alumnus and, you know, I know how challenging the path can be at U of T, especially sometimes. and you know, so, you know, coming out the other side, and my journey continues too, you know, that's not to say it doesn't continue, but, you know, I came from a very academic and science oriented family, you know, where there were only a few pathways truly available to me, that were understood. And, you know, there were very traditional kind of professional pathways. But early on, like I mentioned before, you know, I knew I needed to pursue science in a way that resonated with me and bridged with my other interests like art and spirituality. So I noticed that I felt most kind of stimulated and engrossed in what I'm doing when it exists in the intersection. So, you know, that led me to pursue what I pursued, you know, the Buddhist psychology and addictions research and psychotherapy. And that really kind of set the foundation for my other work. So all of this is to say, you know, I'm a psychotherapist, so I'm not going to give you a traditional answer. But, you know, what is so important is to get to know yourself. Okay. And either through therapy or, you know, pursuing new experiences or lifelong learning, understand who you are, what you value, what's truly important to you. Take the time to work through the effects of challenging life experiences. Don't just kind of shelve it and say, I'm going to deal with that later, because, you know, your body's going to tell you what time you're going to have to deal with it. And it may come out at inopportune times, right? Mm-hmm. So I invite you to do that hard work now. Because it really does set the foundation to building a career and living a life that is truly fulfilling and uses, you know, your natural talents and gifts. Okay. Every one of us is a unique person in some way and has unique talents and things to offer this world. And I think that we do the world a disservice by not honoring that. Okay. So
yeah.
We have to kind of do the work of, you know, building radical self-awareness, willingness to learn and grow, self-compassion along that journey. Okay. Being kind and gentle to ourselves. Okay. Being willing to fail and try new things. You know, it's not failure if you learn something about yourself. Pay attention to the things that you're naturally curious about and take the time to really hone it fully. So I truly believe that your greatest contribution to the world comes from you being yourself, okay, and being true to who you are and your natural gifts, okay? And find the people, find the mentors, the allies, the people who get you and support you and you can collaborate with, because I don't think that we get anywhere alone.
Mm-hmm. I think those are great words to end on, for sure. So thank you so much, Sabina, for joining us. We've had, I think, a very educative conversation, very mind-opening as well. So for anyone interested in learning more about ketamine-based treatment or psychedelic-based treatment, I've put the link to the Field Trip Health website in the bio of this episode. I've also linked some interesting papers that I saw while preparing for this episode. I think there is a huge stigma against psychedelics, and it's interesting because a lot of people don't know the history and the factors that brought that stigma about. But I'm very glad that we have people like Sabina ready to educate us and open our minds to their potential uses. If you have any questions about this episode, please let us know. Our email is thebraincorepodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram @thebraincorepodcast and on Twitter @thebraincorepod. Don't forget, we'll see you in 3 months with another interesting topic. We thank you so much for listening, and we hope you are having a great brain day.